What I'm going to do is talk about some of the performance features that we have in the latest release of Postgres, which is 8.3, which is recently out. If you're already a Postgres user, then you should be upgrading to 8.3. If you're not a Postgres user, then hopefully this is the release that's going to make you change your mind. there's just a whole wealth of performance features in 8.3, and I've listed some of them here. I'm going to go into some of them in more detail, just to give you a feeling for what they do and how they work. One of the most important ones that's actually hard to describe is enhanced scalability, particularly with read-only transactions, but generally across the system. We've removed another load of contention points within the server that allow us to increase scalability, and I've got some detailed results on that to show you in a while. There's also a feature called HOT, which is designed to speed up frequent updates, and I'm going to tell a bit more about that as well. Just sort of running through some of the other ones that I'm not going to go into detail about. Database size reductions, some very important work there that has led to database size reductions anywhere between 10% and 50%, depending on exactly what types of data types you're using. We spent a lot of time trying to smooth the workload through the database server, the purpose of that being to give consistent response times to users, but also to improve the throughput because it's so smooth. One of the other things that we've done is improve the performance logging so that actually you can get more information out of the server as to what it's doing and allowing you to choose some of your parameter values a bit better than things were before. As I say, this list is not all of the features that affect performance in 8.3. This is just some of the bigger ones. Another thing that we've got in 8.3 is something called asynchronous commit, and I'll describe that in a bit more detail. Very important performance feature. The copy command is actually the load command for PostgreSQL, and that has been improved in performance in a couple of important ways. One of the most important ways is that when we're loading a table from its initial load, from the point of it being created, or when we truncate it and then load it, at that point we don't need to write any transaction log information, and large loads can now be 100% faster as a result. We've got recovery I/O optimizations that again will deliver approximately 100% benefit in terms of I/O improvement, which translates directly into throughput improvements. There's multiple sort optimizations that allow the way that we perform sorts to be optimized, and both of those are what I'd call algorithmic improvements. So it's not like it goes X percent faster. In some cases, I mean, I could contrive a case that would be 10,000% faster, and then in other cases, you won't notice it's there. But there are certain classes of sort that happen, both with merge joins and with a sort where you have an order by and a limit clause in the same SQL statement that will be substantially faster. Particularly with a lot of merge joins, you'll find that they could be as much as 100% faster as a result. One of the other things that we've done is tune scans to be much more efficient for CPU level 2 cache as well. And I'll go into a little bit more detail about that on some of the following slides. There's also a thing called synchronous scan that I'll tell you about. The most important slide I've got in my set is guess which one is Postgres? you've guessed it, it's the one on the right. This is the scalability of PostgreSQL 8.2. And you probably wonder why I'm showing you a slide of PostgreSQL 8.2. Well, this is before we improved it, okay? So if you think that the difference between the graph on the left and the graph on the right is stark, and it is, then when we run with 8.3, what we're seeing here is we're looking at one CPU, two CPUs, and four CPUs, basically, in various kind of combinations of chips and CPUs and what have you. Now, the scalability that we see there, on 8.2, we measured peaked at about about 12 CPUs. 12 CPUs was the point where the scalability graph, instead of going sort of nicely upwards, started to kind of peter out. And that was 8.2. Now, we've made significant gains on the way that works now, and I would estimate that we can go comfortably to 16, but possibly more like 20 or 24, depending on the workload. Now, that will be better on read-only workloads. Yes, you have. Why does it fall? Do you mean here or here? I know why it falls there. I mean, this is a fairly typical curve. This is the number of concurrent sessions that you've got. So when you don't have enough sessions, it can't drive it hard enough. And then there's likely to be an optimum point here, and it's dropping off just slightly. Now, that particular loss we would definitely have made back in 8.3, and that's a lot smoother out a little way. You can see the sort of slight jitter there in some aspects of the performance. We've actually got a lot smoother across the whole time range now. We used to get little spikes as a result of a number of different things. One of them was the point where we switched WAL files. So every time we did 16 megabytes worth of writes, we got a little response time peak while the WAL file switched. And another one, which was actually worse in some respects, was the checkpoint. And we actually got quite a bad spike on that. Yes. Depends, but that was 8.2. What I'm saying is we're well beyond that now with 8.3. But I just wanted to give you sort of the plain numbers. I don't need to say anything about the one on the left, do I? Yeah, that's true. Well, yeah, I didn't want to be too unfair. Yeah, I mean, basically. MySQL's peaking at about here. So if you're running exactly, is it 9 or 7? 7 users on MySQL is storming. Then I've got some more results, basically from a second source, which show pretty much exactly the same scalability characteristics. This is on BSD. So we've changed operating system, and we've kept Postgres is basically the only constant there, and the performance characteristics are displayed to be pretty similar. So that seems pretty good to me. I've given some of the references for that as well. That was the scalability side of things. I've got another couple of major features to talk about. Sorry, did that answer your question? Yeah, okay. another couple of major features to talk about in this release. There was a big press hoo-ha about heap-organized tuples, which was a shame that we couldn't get that right in our own press release. But there's a feature called HOT, and it stands for heap-only tuples. And it's specifically designed to improve the speed and consistency of frequent update operations on the back-end server. Now, why would we choose frequent updates to improve the performance and consistency of? Well, it was actually a particular problem for Postgres beforehand, that frequent updates were quite painful for us. And that's why you'll see some benchmarks comparing Postgres against another database, and they always pick updates because it was what we did worst. So it was a pain point that we wanted to address. So that's why we've picked this. Now, the general idea is that as we're updating the table, we will do little mini vacuums on a block-by-block basis as we go through the table. And that's quite important because it means that we don't have to wait until the next time that we run a vacuum against the whole table. So in terms of keeping the performance consistent, while the update frequency is very high, it's particularly important. Now, the way that we do that is where the name comes from. Now, previously, what we did is when we updated a row, we had to insert new records into the index. So when we did updates frequently, the index got bigger, which, if you think that sounds strange, yes, it was strange, and it caused a sort of slight performance degradation. So what we do now is we choose to skip storing of the index tuples for that row when it's being updated, as long as it can fit on the same data block. And many times it can, because we're doing this sort of as-needed cleaning or garbage collection. Yeah, sorry, do you have a question? Okay. you're just going, yay, because, yeah, okay, good. Now, the important thing here is that this will only work if we don't update one of the columns that was indexed. Now, what that means is if you've got six indexes on your table and the updates don't touch any of those columns, if you add a seventh index where one of the columns is being updated, you will then lose the ability to use hot. Okay, so you've got to now be slightly careful where you put your indexes. Okay, it's not too much of a bother because generally you don't index the columns that were being updated anyway. I hope that makes sense, because you index the primary key column. So your typical question is, what is the value of particular column when my key is X? Yeah, so it actually isn't too much of a bother. The only problem that it can cause is when you've got an application along the lines of tracking a moving object, because if the object's moving and you want to know quickly where it is using a sort of open GIS, whiz mark, I want to look at you while I say GIS, query, then that could cause a problem. But there are design ways around that. So in many cases, this is going to give a considerable performance improvement. It is really worthy of note that this is probably the largest project that the community had ever undertaken, and in terms of planning and execution, it really involved about an 18-month cycle. Probably 8 people, but I don't know, it might be more than that. And I was just trying to estimate the number of man years. I mean, you know, it wasn't a short project. It wasn't a short project because when we started doing it, we didn't know how to do it. And we had to work it out. Next feature worthy of note in 8.3 is something called async commit. And the idea here is that it's an option. That's an important point. And the option is that we don't have to wait for the disk write to occur when we issue a commit. Okay. Now, if your transactions are fairly short and they're operating on data in memory, then avoiding that disk write might actually make the whole transaction significantly shorter. And for example, on my laptop, you can get 900% performance gain using asynchronous commit. And so in the right conditions with the right application, it's a win. And obviously in the wrong conditions, it's not a win. Sorry, you had a question. No, we're not bypassing the wall. what we're doing is we're just not syncing the wall at commit time. And so what can happen is, this is the nice way of putting it, is we've implemented a more flexible version of the MySQL guarantee of robustness versus speed.
I think it's good the transactions all get manual.
Yeah.
But you might miss the last couple.
That's it. Yes, what will happen is you may lose as many as 200 milliseconds worth of previous commits. So something that was committed and the application was told this one's safe will actually have been unsafe. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. This is not a default setting. It's an optional setting. We've also designed in the ability to allow you to apply it to individual transactions. So you can choose on an individual transaction by transaction basis whether you have speed or robustness. Now, the choice of whether a transaction is asynchronous or not can be deferred right until the end of a transaction. So one of the applications you might want to do is to, if you're taking orders over the internet, what you might do is, if it's an order for a catalogue, then you don't bother to synchronise it, you just make it async. Whereas if it's an order for £100,000 worth of hardware, you want to make that one robust. Okay, so you can decide in flight what your transaction robustness is going to be. For example, sorry, you do have your hand up. I'll come back. We did discuss making it a commit syntax, but it's actually a session setting, so you can turn it on for the whole session, you can turn it on for a transaction at any point in the transaction, or you can turn it on for a user, or you can even set it on for the whole system. So, yeah.
Presumably you've got two connections, and one connection is making all commits asynchronously, and one making them synchronously. Presumably every time one's making them synchronously, commits something, all of that stuff's going to get synced.
That's correct, yeah. Yeah, there's in the presence of safe and unsafe transactions, the safe ones are still safe and they make the unsafe ones safe too. Okay, so there's no kind of like, you know, the presence of an unsafe one doesn't screw all the others, yeah? So it's, sorry, there was a question over here. I'll come back. Right, okay, sorry, go on. No. Why would you want that? I don't know.
You can't really know because what, then your data will not be the integrity will not be the safe transaction may have used the data from the unsafe one in generating its data, and now
yeah.
Your data is inconsistent.
You have to, as soon as the safe one goes, you have to commit all previous changes, whether they are unsafe or safe. So you can't do it without screwing my head up, without screwing the system up. So that's yeah. I mean, basically, just to say that's kind of like a MySQL option. It's just so when people are saying, oh well, MySQL's quicker because it does it like this, then we can offer that. And one thing I would add is that. Significant changes to the database, for example, a create table statement, even if you request it to be asynchronous, will never be. Okay, there's certain transactions that are regarded that are basically overridden by the system, so it's only normal user changes. Yep, sorry, go on.
I was expecting in the heading asynchronous commit that you would get a message back. I'm not familiar with the API. Saying that this transaction
Well, that's, I mean, when you ask for a commit and you get the message back from the commit, at that point, on the default, that's when it's safe.
Yeah.
Here, you get the message back and it says, I've committed, but it actually hasn't yet. And that's exactly the same API as you get with all of the other systems that offer this. This is one of the few databases that offers you a transaction by transaction option. On a lot of systems, you just turn it on or off. Sorry, Greg. Yeah, there's also anything that touches temporary files, so a very large query, and there's another couple of categories. So it's basically anything that would endanger the integrity of the system, we don't allow you to do. So all you'll ever lose is the data you chose to potentially lose. Okay, next one is scan performance. What we've done with scans is to reuse buffers in a very tight circle when we do a scan of a large table. And in doing so, all of the buffers stay on the level 2 cache on the CPU, and we get approximately a 20% performance improvement as a result of doing that. A side benefit of that is that we never spoil the cache when we do a sequential scan. So if you've got a table that's much bigger than memory, previously it was possible to trash the cache when you read that data into memory. That can't happen now. In combination with that, it's a separate change, but it's a related change, is a thing called synchronous scans. And this allows us to piggyback on each other's table scans. So for example, if I start to scan a table and I start at block 0 and I go through to the end of the table, the next person to scan that table will see that I'm in the middle of scanning it, and instead of starting at 0, he'll start halfway through the table, read to the end, go back to the beginning, and then go back to that halfway point again. Okay. So if you've got a number of people regularly scanning a table, it needn't be a bad thing, because we can end up doing basically one lot of I.O. for no matter how many sessions are consuming that I.O. And as a result, all of the sessions all roughly stay together as we read through that table. Okay, so some significant performance improvements, which when you combine them with the database size reduction stuff, means that we've got some very useful performance gains for large systems. We have a question. Synchronous scans? No. Yeah. No, actually it's not, although I've said it improves the L2 cache hit ratio, we're not doing anything to look at the way that the hardware's set up. It's just an algorithm that naturally allows you to better use the L2 cache. So it's not like we're reaching into the hardware and doing something funny, it's just an algorithm change. Yep.
So is it the same sort of
No, I mean, if we all ran a sequential scan, we'd all run with 32 buffers of our own, and we wouldn't conflict necessarily with the other ones. But they can work together on the same things. So, just in striving to sort of get back onto time, my summary of all of this is that a Postgres 8.3 database is five things. It's smaller than earlier releases of Postgres. It's faster than earlier releases of Postgres. It provides smoother response time to queries both large and small. It's more scalable than previous releases, so it will fit and adapt better to the later classes of CPU. And it's more tunable in that we've added and taken away. I should also say it's more tunable because we've taken things away that didn't make a difference. We've removed those things and we've added in things that do make a difference, not just extra tuning hooks, but actually ways of logging information that helps you tune the system. Okay, so on every kind of dimension I can think of with regards to performance, 8.3 is a lot better. And as a result of some of these features, upgrading to 8.3 is also faster. Okay, so you've got absolutely no excuse. Okay, so there's been a lot of questions, but if there's any more questions, please ask them now. Plans. That's a big word for Postgres. I've got a lot of to-do items there, and I've spent some time with the Sun team, who I know are working on scalability improvements. Planning is a big word. Yeah, having worked with Sun, I know what the Sun team were trying to do was run with 2,000 sessions, which they have been advised not to. But there are certain limits.
How independent is the I/O of different databases on the same server?
That's a strange kind of a question. Because
if you're writing a huge amount of data on one database, and someone comes along and does a tiny little RTP transaction commit on another database,
well,
the entire write of the other database.
You've got certain parts of the server are shared between databases, and then other parts of the server are potentially completely separate, depending on how you set it up. The mere fact of it being a separate database, which has a specific meaning in Postgres, doesn't guarantee that they're on different parts of the disk. You'd need to specifically place them on separate table spaces, and only then would they be partially separate. But things like the transaction log are never separate. There is only one transaction log for all databases on one server. But there's nothing to stop you running multiple servers on one system.
So if you are just running one server, there is potential for a bulk data database to cause large delays in an LTP database?
I would have said so, yeah. I wouldn't be inclined to do that. Yeah.
Even if you separated everything, I mean, there's certainly potential that your mail server would cause things to slow down if they're on the same machine and they're accessing the same disk. Yes.
There's almost an additional problem than
potential. Yeah. I mean, I think that's why we've got, you know, containers and things like that, those technologies that separate the resources, because they do conflict, and there's no, you know, it's not Postgres's fault that they conflict. Well, you're right.
It's not going to be the case that if you wrote a million rows, that that's going to be one continuous lock on anything else getting in.
Yeah.
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 So you're not talking minutes, or something, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, there is already a piggyback while feature that what can happen is if two commits occur very close together, then it will already take both commits to disk without doing further work. I think it's fair to say that we're likely to do some more work on group commit in this release. Well, yeah, but it's kind of async, isn't it? So if you really wanted that guarantee, there is a way of doing it, because you can ask where the well insert pointer is up to work out whether it's gone to disk or not. So you could actually, if you wanted to, make a call to check whether you're now safe. But that's overkill, and you didn't want to know that. I didn't want to know that, certainly. Yeah, go. Well, yes, but not because of this feature. What we determined was there was a roughly optimal number of buffers in the ring to use, and we've chosen 32. We did talk about making it configurable, but it's kind of like too weird a parameter for most people to tune, and we figured that most people would just set it wrong, whereas a figure of 32 was actually close to optimal in most of the scenarios we tested. There were some places where it was faster, but there was also some where it caused other problems as well. So. Yep, sorry.
Go back to these asynchronous transactions.
Yep, it's a popular subject.
Yes. You said you can turn them on or off for a particular session or a particular transaction.
Yes.
Can the DBA of the system disable them entirely for that database?
Yes.
And is that the default?
You can set that for the whole server as a whole in the postgresql.conf. And that will work for all normal transactions apart from the ones that it can't ever work for. Yeah. So like the create table statements. And
What I mean is asynchronous transactions.
Yeah.
Can I completely forbid them? Can the DBA say, this is evil and you shall never do it? And when client software requests an asynchronous, it says, well, yeah, okay, but just does a normal transaction anyway.
Actually, no. But there are a number of features on the Postgres server where kind of clever developers can sneak extra things in there to make it work slightly faster at the expense of certain things. Nobody actually requested that at the time. No, I think we need one. I mean, really, because there's various, I mean, for example, like WorkMem, anybody can just give themselves a gig of WorkMem. Which is kind of problematic.
At
so,
level, isn't evil.
Isn't evil.
So you could
also
just not
do it anyway. But if it was an option at compile time of a particular package, and the person writing it as the option was different to the person configuring it, the person configuring it didn't realize the implications.
Yeah, you'll get like 8 million emails a second hitting at you.